In the last 15 years, you and I, through the good offices of our federal government, have given farmers $260 billion to grow crops. $17 billion of our money subsidized corn syrup, high fructose corn syrup, cornstarch, and soy oils, which were then used to make snack foods like Twinkies. This leads us to ask, why are we funding fat?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 747th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Cusco who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Hello.
Folks, it's a fact. In the 15 years between 1995 and 2010, U.S. taxpayers, that's you and me, paid farmers $260 billion to grow crops like corn and soybeans that now cover our heartland. $16.9 billion, or $17 billion of our money, subsidized the production of four common food additives: corn syrup, high fructose corn syrup, corn starch, and soy oil. These subsidized additives were then used to cook up snack foods designed to please taste buds that evolved over many millenniums to crave the sweet and the fat. Many of these snack foods were targeted to children between the ages of 6 and 11. Consequently, 1 in 5 of our children are now obese, and as they grow up will become vulnerable to heart disease and diabetes, which will then cost you and me more billions of dollars in health care. While we spend billions to encourage the growth of corn and soybeans, we spend next to nothing to encourage the growth of other crops, the exception being apples, which we fund with a few million dollars every year. Now, if, as Deep Throat suggests, we follow the money, our money will invariably lead us to a head-scratching question, which is, why are we funding fat? Here to help us follow the money today, we have Michael Russo, who is the policy analyst for the U.S. Public Interest Research Group. Michael, welcome to the Food Chain. Are you there? Okay, good. It'll punch you up a little bit more. Good. U.S. Public Interest Group. Are you the folks that are always trying to get me to sign the petition?
Yeah, we spend some time knocking on doors and trying to engage grassroots in other campaigns working on, including this one.
And good. Are you on a cell phone?
I'm on a landline, but it doesn't sound like the connection's very good, unfortunately.
No, it doesn't. Maybe what we'll do is I have them turned up. But, well, we'll live with it, and maybe we'll try something else during the break. So, U.S. Public Interest Group, what exactly do you guys do?
Well, we're a public interest advocacy organization. You mentioned the door knocking. We do a lot of grassroots organizing to get the word out about important public interest issues to members of the public and connect their voices with our leaders in Washington, D.C. and in state capitals across the country. We also do a lot of research to identify areas where the public interest isn't being served, usually where powerful industries have managed to spend a lot of money to influence the political process and make sure that policies are serving their ends rather than the broad public good. And so our researchers and activists and organizers go out, build support, and try to end some of these policies and, get everything from, health care to public transit to here, tax spending and agricultural policy to serve all of us here in the country rather than those well-heeled special interests that have a lot of access and influence.
Fair enough. Well, we always ask, who pays the way? So who pays the way for U.S. Public Interest Research Group?
Sorry, can you say again? I didn't quite catch that.
Yeah, who pays the way? Who funds you?
who funds us. Ordinary citizens fund a lot of our work. When we knock on doors and talk to folks, we also sign up citizen members who support the work that we do and the campaigns that we run. And there are some independent foundations which also give us grant money for the campaigns that we run. But we're not certainly not funded by any private industry groups or anybody like that. So can be a little more independent of and stand up for what's good for all of us.
Fair enough. Why did you guys become interested in food? What led you to work with food and research food and the subsidy question here?
I mean, I think that we really came to this issue from, you know, sort of two places of work that we had already been doing. The first was around tax and budget issues. We've got a long history of looking for places where there are wasteful taxpayer subsidies or, you know, tax breaks that are going to private industries that are, you know, basically spending billions of dollars but aren't really providing any benefit to, you know, most of us. And so each of us taxpayers are on the hook for, you know, programs that could be enriching big corporations but not providing a fair return. And so, you know, especially as the deficit has become a bigger issue, we've been even, you know, more aggressive trying to find places where, you know, we can, you know, cut things that really don't help anybody and really, you know, even if we didn't have a deficit problem, we'd want to get rid of. And then at the same time, we've also done a lot of work on healthcare. And, you know, I think you said in the introduction, you know, we've seen a lot of work done around reforming healthcare, around health insurance, and big changes there. And certainly those are all important changes, but if you start talking to experts in the field who are looking forward 20 years, 30 years, you know, almost without exception, they'll say that, you know, all those issues are important, but, you know, the big looming thing that we need to deal with is this obesity epidemic. You know, the amount of young people who are overweight or obese has more or less tripled over the past 30 years.
Well, it doesn't seem like it's just young people. You walk down any the streets of any American city, and boy, what happened to us? I guess that's the question on the table today. So you put together a report. You're the author of Apples to Twinkies, Comparing Federal Subsidies of Fresh Produce and Junk Food. What led you to make that study, to make that comparison?
Yeah, I think that the study, again, came out of those two areas of trying to figure out where we're spending our money and what it's doing to our health. And, you know, I think we came up with the idea of comparing, you know, where these commodity crop subsidies for junk food ingredients go to those for fresh fruits and vegetables, you know, basically by looking at what we know makes for a healthy diet. You know, in fact, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, you know, has set up their Healthy Plate campaign, which is the food pyramid. You might have seen it. It's basically a plate, which is a guide to how to eat a healthy meal. And it's half fresh fruits and vegetables, a quarter whole grains, quarter protein, bit of dairy on the side, which you can quibble with, but nutritionists would basically tell you, yeah, that's more or less balanced. You want about, you know, half to be fresh fruits and vegetables, about a quarter whole grains. But if you look at where our subsidies are actually going, they're very biased towards these commodity crops, corn, soybeans, wheat, and, you know,
the things that now cover our heartland from one end of the country to the other, right?
Yeah, I mean they're grown everywhere, and these are national subsidies that are paid out.
Right. So we have a lot of them, and we're growing a lot of them. But let's start following the money at the beginning of the trail, which of course is the government, which is you and me. And why do we subsidize agriculture? I mean, what did you say? You said what, $260 billion in the last 15 years?
Yeah, $260 billion since 1995. And, I mean, the history of agricultural support and subsidies has a pretty long history in the U.S. You know, the biggest large-scale programs really started coming online in the 1930s with the combination of the Great Depression and the Dust Bowl. You know, there's a real issue with farmers being forced off of their land and a lot of worry about, you know, what that meant for, you know, the economy, for, you know, our food security.
So what was the thinking? I mean, back in the 1930s, the farmers are in a dust bowl. Let's give them money, and we'll keep them afloat, right?
Right. That was the initial impetus, but it started getting into the 50s and 60s and 70s. These programs stuck around, and the shape of agriculture changed pretty substantially.
Well, why did the programs stick around when agriculture changed? Because, you know, after World War II, when we started the industrialization of our agriculture, you know, the size of the average farm kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Was part of the reason they kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger was to collect more government subsidies?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a part of the story. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of pieces to the rising industrialization and increased size of farms, but there were kind of two trends going on that reinforced each other. You know, first, the fact that all these subsidies are based, or a lot of these subsidies are based on just the raw acreage that you plant as a commodity crop,
right,
creates incentive to just plant the same crop and more land. And it means that the bigger farming operations have more subsidized money that they can then use to buy up the smaller farmers around their edges and get even bigger. At the same time, because they're getting a lot more money, they can plow some of that back into lobbying campaign contributions and spawn.
Right, so they can buy off the government. So now we're at a place where, as you state in your From Twinkies to Apples, we now have 4% of our farmers getting 74% of the money. And that money's big money. That's $260 billion. So we're funding big, big people so that we get big. Makes no sense to me, but maybe we can make sense of it. And we have Mike Russo to help us from the U.S. Public Interest Research Group. We're talking about our money and how our money is going to subsidize things that make us fat. And we're asking, why are we funding fat? Your money. Joy, stay tuned. We will be right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, here's an interesting notion. Of the 37 ingredients in a Twinkie, 14 of them are subsidized by you and I. 14 of them. The government takes money out of our pockets and puts it into the pocket of some very big businesses to subsidize foods that make us fat. And so that we will end up having to pay billions more dollars out of our pocket for health care. Somehow, something went wrong somewhere along the line. A program that started out to help very small farmers back in the 1930s, days of Franklin Roosevelt, has now become a program that subsidizes 4% of the farmers get 74% of the money. And the money's big, $260 billion in the last 15 years. What in the heck happened? What happened to this program, Mike Russo?
I mean, I think that you really need to look at the increased size of farms and the increased size of their political influence is, you know, really what's at the heart of this story. You know, you mentioned about how, you know, these started out as basically rescue programs for small farmers and, you know, served that job pretty well. But, you know, the players get bigger and the programs start to stick around, and pretty soon the big players in the industry realized that if they took some of the money that they made from, you know, the profits they were making on their subsidized ingredients and put that into campaign contributions, you know, put that into lobbying, they could keep these programs around even after the rationale for them, you know, had pretty much well receded. They figured they could even expand them.
What happens to you and I, though? I mean, we're out here, we're paying taxes, we're going broke, and this stuff keeps going on. I guess that's where an organization like the U.S. Public Interest Research Group will stand up and say, look what's happening to your money. Is that what's going on? Is that what you do?
I think that's exactly what needs to happen. You know, if you talk to people about why these subsidies have stuck around for so long, you know, a lot of members of Congress, you know, their states, their districts don't really get a lot of benefit from these subsidies. You know, they don't have giant agribusiness combines growing tons of corn in their district, but they're not really hearing a lot from their constituents about the issue. And so for the folks who are heavily lobbied and do have a lot of these interests in their states and districts, they come and say, oh, we need to do this for the subsidies. You know, some of those members might think, well, maybe that's not the best thing to do with public resources, but it's just not really a concern that that I'm hearing from constituents. And so, you know, that's why we're doing the work that we're trying to do to inform people, get them to speak up and talk to their members of Congress to build more momentum around this and finally end these subsidies.
Wow. So why are we subsidizing corn and soybeans? I mean, and almost nothing else. Why are we spending, you know, 200 some billion dollars to subsidize these two crops? What is it about them that makes them so incredibly lucrative?
Yeah, well, I mean, they're part of what's called the big five commodity crops. Mm-hmm. Soy, corn, wheat, cotton, and rice get by far the lion's share of the subsidies. And they share a couple common properties, especially corn and soy. You know, one, it's very easy to scale up and just grow a bunch of them in very large operations. So the fact that there's subsidy money available on a per-acre basis creates an incentive to get bigger and bigger and grow more and more and more. And at the same time, a lot of them aren't used for, you know, human consumption, for you and I eating them,
right.
Which
cotton
is an important market. Yeah, cotton certainly nobody's eating. But even corn, only about 1% of the corn that's grown in the U.S. is, you know, the corn that we think of going to the supermarket,
right.
You know, sweet corn in an ear.
It's mostly grown for feed, right?
A lot of it goes to feed. Some of it goes to ethanol. A lot of it's processed, including into these junk food additives. The same with soy. A lot of that is ground up, and the mash is used in large measure for feeding animals, and the soys are, the oils, are harvested and used as these additives as well. And so it's these crops which have multiple uses, not just for feeding people, which is, you know, a limited market, but then you can do all these other industrial processes, take it to the livestock side of things, and have a lot more demand for it.
So we're not even eating this stuff directly, except in the form of, like, snack foods, right? You know, does the money we spend on corn and soybean lead us directly to the obesity that has become so evident throughout our nation and, indeed, throughout the world? I mean, is there a direct trail? If we follow the money, does it lead us directly from these crops to our fatness?
I mean, certainly from, you know, those crops and the practice of creating more junk food is a very tight link between that and obesity. If you look at the change in our eating habits since the 70s, the amount of calories that we've eaten at, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner haven't changed that much. What's really changed is that we're eating more than 200 calories more every single day in snacks, in between meal snacks.
Mm.
And the fact that there's all these highly fatty, highly processed, very convenient, you just, you know, open up a package and eat them. Junk foods available on the shelves and very heavily marketed.
Even the ones that say healthy junk food, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the amount of requirements on what you can and can't say on those health claims on labels, it's very weak. You can get away with saying just about anything. You know, if it's got a lot of sodium and a lot of calories, but it's maybe a little lower in fat, you can say that. If you've got a ton of sugar in it, you can say low sodium. You can make anything seem healthy if you've got a clever enough marketer working on it.
Sure. So, you know, you're the one that's been following the money. Does that money lead directly from these foods to our obesity epidemic?
From the foods, I think it does. I mean, certainly there's, you know, other pieces as well, you know, exercise and you know, how much cooking inside the home people do as opposed to eating out and eating junk food are a big part of it as well. But any account of why obesity has skyrocketed since the 70s, I think, has to grapple with the epidemic of junk food we're dealing with. At the same time, I don't want to over-argue that the subsidies are what's driving all of that. There's a lot of marketing factors and others mm-hmm. that have gone into that rise of junk food. The fact that there are these very cheap ingredients that are substituting high fructose corn syrup for sugar and putting soils into everything is a part of the picture, but it's probably not driving the low cost of the junk food.
So what are the additives that we subsidize that you look at? Which additives are really the focal point of your considerations here?
The ones that we're really focused on were, you know, first the ones that are derived from corn and soy, because that's where the lion's share of the subsidy dollars are going. And then we looked at additives which, you know, basically are empty calories that are just adding, you know, sweetness, just adding fat, or just adding carbohydrate. And so we focus in on just four, corn syrup, high fructose corn syrup, cornstarch, and soy oils, which, again, are derived from those commodity crops and don't have really any nutritional value.
And, you know, these snack foods are really designed to take advantage of, these snack foods are really designed to take advantage of our taste buds that evolved over millenniums to appreciate things like sweet, fat, and salty, right?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, our diet really evolved in conditions of scarcity. For most of human history, just about nobody had enough to eat. And so, you know, very calorie-rich foods were a rarity and something to really be treasured. And so our tastes and our eating habits, you know, a lot of our physiology is based around thinking, oh, this is really good. Who knows where my next meal is going to come from? I better, you know, eat a lot of this stuff. You know, right now, where those kind of food items are available everywhere, you know, our genetics and our physiology is really programming us to eat way too much of this food that's really unhealthy when overconsumed. We just weren't designed to be in this kind of environment, and a lot of the junk food really exploits that.
And it does a wonderful job of doing just that. So one of the ultimate in junk foods, of course, is the Twinkies. And the Twinkie has 37 ingredients in this one piece of snack food. Can you imagine a recipe that would include 37 ingredients? I was thinking about this. You could write an entire encyclopedia about what's in a Twinkie. And 14 of those things are subsidized by you and I. And we're going to take a look at that and ask why. When we come back, we have today with us Mike Russo, who is a policy analyst with the U.S. Public Interest Research Group, and also author of the report. What's the name of your report? From Twinkies to Apples?
Apples to Twinkies.
Apples to Twinkies.
Apples to Twinkies. Apples,
so Google Apples to Twinkies and get in on a very interesting piece of reading. And this is the Food Chain Radio Program. I am Michael Olson. When we get back, we'll look at the Twinkie. You ever had one? Of course you have. You could buy a Twinkie and you can put it on your shelf and it'll be there 10 years from now and you can still eat it. Doesn't that scare you? 14 of the 37 ingredients you and I subsidize with money out of our pockets. Right back on the Food Chain. Hey, folks, welcome back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Got some news for you. In the last 15 years, you and I, through the good offices of our federal government, have given farmers $260 billion to grow crops. $17 billion of that, of our money, taken from our pockets, subsidized corn syrup, high fructose corn syrup, corn starch, and soy oils, which were then used to make snack foods like Twinkies. And this leads us to ask today, why are we funding fats? Here to tell us why is we have Mike Russo, who's a policy analyst for the U.S. Public Interest Research Group. They look into our federal government and see what the heck they're doing, the government's doing with our money, and came up with this incredible report from Apples to Twinkies about how so much of our money taken from our pockets is going into the pockets of a very few people to grow a very few crops. 4% of the nation's farmers now get 74% of our money to grow foods that make us fat. What the heck is going on here? Twinkies, 37 ingredients, 14 of which are subsidized by you and I. Mike Russo, how the heck did that happen? What 14 ingredients are we talking about? I can't imagine a food that has 37 ingredients. It blows my mind.
Yeah, I mean, unless you're prone to cooking with soy lecithin and soy protein isolate, you're probably not being quite as creative as the makers of these junk foods are. But, you know, that's what we're looking at.
First of all, why do they put 37 ingredients in something? I mean,
some of it's the artificial flavoring, some of it's the artificial colorings, you know, some of it's the preservatives that they put in order to get those Twinkies to last quite so long.
And they last a long, long time, right?
Yes, I think the Twinkies in the survival bunkers, the fallout shelters from the 50s, it's one of those good investments on that thing.
Keep them forever. So we subsidize 14 of the 37 ingredients that go into Twinkies. What are they? What are you and I, as taxpayers, subsidizing in Twinkies?
Well, probably the biggest ticket items are those four that I mentioned earlier, corn syrup, high fructose corn syrup, corn starch, and then soy oils.
Why are we subsidizing them in the first place? I mean, they have nothing to do with helping small farmers survive a Dust Bowl.
No, certainly. There's very few small farmers who are, you know, living hard-scrabble existences in order to produce soy lecithin for the Twinkie market.
So why are we, I mean, where is the reasoning in the government that says, hey, we have to start subsidizing soy lecithin?
I think that it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy in a lot of ways, I think. You know, the initial goal was to subsidize a lot of farmers who are growing, you know, a lot of the crops that are out there. Then as the markets got more and more concentrated, particular farmers started, and agribusinesses at this point, started specializing. So they would plant all of their fields with soy or all of their fields with corn because there were subsidies available, there's economies of scale they could take advantage of. And then to deal with all of that supply, they started selling it to these producers who had dirt cheap ingredients and therefore had the incentive to start getting very clever, figuring out, okay, well, if I don't want to use eggs to, you know, blend together all of the ingredients in this, you know, bakery item, maybe I can use something derived from soy to do it instead and do it more cheaply and do it in a way that I can, you know, store that chemical on the shelf for longer. So there's been enormous creativity unleashed by the fact that there are these artificially cheap ingredients out there, which then means that the market is even bigger, which means they make even more money and have even more political influence, and it becomes a vicious circle.
So the reasoning from the government is simply, I'm going to subsidize these people because if I subsidize these people, more of the money that I use to subsidize them with is going to come back so I can get elected again.
That's part of it. And also just thinking, well, we'll subsidize what's there. What's there is these, you know, big commodity crop operations.
Right.
And, you know, they distort the market, which, you know, makes it even more skewed. And, again, it kind of feeds on itself.
So this way of thinking is having a direct impact on our bodies, or so you seem to assert in your report from Apples to Twinkies. And that impact is the fact that we're just gaining weight. In a lot of ways.
Yeah, we're gaining. Yeah, no, we certainly are. Obesity is really the public health crisis of our time. You know, it's affecting, you know, both kids and adults, but, you know, really what is happening on childhood obesity is really shocking. There are obese children right now who have, you know, artery plaque buildups that would be in the high range for a 45-year-old in terms of putting them at risk for heart disease. Type 2 diabetes, which is the diabetes linked to lack of exercise, overweight diet. Used to be called adult onset diabetes. You used to hear that term. Right now, it's epidemic among young people. About one third of American children born in 2000 are on track to develop it. So we're not just getting sicker; we're also getting sicker.
And this, of course, is going to have a huge impact on more costs for healthcare, of course, and they're going to take that out of our pockets as well. So there seems to be this incredibly vicious cycle wherein we give farmers to grow money to grow crops. They grow the crops, they sell the crops, they take some of the money and take it back to Washington, D.C., and convince the government to give them more money to grow crops. And so that starts off this whole food chain. And then we use those crops. They keep growing more and more and more of them. And so what do we do with all of these crops? Well, let's figure it out. So they come up with all of these fun things like Twinkies. And they're easy to eat. They're easy to feed your children, snack foods, because they're packaged, here, kid, take this and shut up. And that's how kids get fat, right?
Yeah, exactly. All the pieces really fit together quite snugly. And then certainly, again, there's a lot of other things going on. You know, the rise of junk food and processed food has a lot to do with the fact that a lot of people these days just don't spend as much time cooking as they used to. It's a little harder to find fresh fruits and vegetables in some places, so-called food deserts. So, you know, there's a lot of other stuff going on as well, but this very tight cycle between the overproduction of these commodity crops, the junk food additives, and then our expanding waistlines is pretty tight as well.
You know, let's define that whole notion of a food desert. I'm sure a lot of people have heard of it, but probably many people haven't. I found food deserts in the most bizarre places. One of them was the Wind River Indian Reservation in South Dakota. Mm-hmm. There in a... The store was no food. It was just salt and sugar and oil. and snack foods, you know. And you find those food deserts in grocery stores throughout the land. So, and we are, in fact, subsidizing those food deserts with a big chunk of our tax money. Okay. So is there's this real strong food chain built up around this whole thing. Is there a way of breaking that food chain? I mean, I don't think there is. Okay, we're going to talk about that. We're going to have to take a quick break. But that's the situation, folks. You and I are having money taken out of our pocket by our friends in government. They're taking that money and they're giving it to some very big farmers to grow some very big crops that make us very big. And they're taking a lot of money out of our pockets to do that. And so that money goes to the farmers. They grow the crops. They sell the crops. They take the money and take it back to Washington, D.C. And they convince our friends in government to take more money out of our pockets to give to the farmers so they can grow more crops that just make it bigger and bigger and bigger. Is it possible to break that cycle so that you and I can keep some of our money and we can get healthy? What do you think out there? Curious as to what you think? Give us a call. We're at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. It's your money. What do you think? We will be right back. Well, folks, it's your money and it's my money. $260 billion of our money has gone to fund the production of a few crops by a few farmers. 4% of the farmers in the United States get 74% of the money. Must be thoroughly rich. My goodness. That the crops they grew also have a way of just making us fat. Corn and soybeans and their additives that are manufactured from them are used as the foundation for the snack food industry. And the snack food industry produces products that are well targeted to satisfy taste buds that have evolved over the millenniums to crave things like salt and sweet and fat. And so they figured out how to hit us right in the taste buds. And so when we're going through our day, we get a little hungry and we grab those snack foods and we just blow ourselves up. 1 in 5 children between the ages of 6 and 11 are now obese. And think of the costs that are going to come from this. So we've got ourselves in this vicious cycle of subsidizing ourselves to death, so to speak. Can we get out of it? Mike Russo, you looked at this. You followed the money through this food chain. It appears as though the people who are getting the money are using it to stay very powerful. Is there any way to take away their subsidies or to end this madness?
I think that there is. For all that these are very well-entrenched subsidies and very powerful interests, at the same time, they've been able to flourish because they've been out of sight, out of mind. You know, the people who knew about the fact that we were spending billions on this stuff were the people receiving it, and the general public didn't really know. I think the rise of the food movement in general and more information about these subsidies has changed that political calculus a little bit. I think that a lot of folks in D.C. And a lot of our leaders and activists are beginning to take a second look at these things and thinking that, actually this is not what we want to be doing. At least it is enough of a problem. We shouldn't be spending billions to make it worse. So, I do think that there is certainly hope, and there have been a lot of proposals, nothing enacted yet, but a lot of proposals that would move things in a better direction.
I guess a great place to start would be just to ask, why are we funding fat? If we keep asking that question enough, maybe people will start trying to come up with an answer, and when they try to come up with an answer, is there any reasonable answer to this, to why we're doing this? I mean, what do they say when you ask them, why are we doing this?
I mean, I think they tend to duck the question and turn it to questions of economics and subsidizing the agricultural sector as it is and not wanting to pick winners and losers and so on. But, I mean, this isn't the scheme that anyone would come up with if you were, starting from a blank.
What do you mean they don't want to pick winners and losers? Of course they're picking winners of losers. When you give 4% of the farmers 74% of the money, you're picking winners and losers in a very big way.
Right, exactly. We've really distorted the market as a result of these subsidies and other rules that have been operative over time. And so it's disingenuous to just say, oh, we're just responding to what the farmers are growing out there in their fields. I mean, we really, you know, as a matter of policy, push them to grow just these few commodity crops, which then get processed into junk food. And just as policy helps get us into this, you know, we really need to use our national policy to get us out.
Have you ever heard somebody sit down and look you in the eye and give you a real, from the heart answer as to why we're doing this? I mean, have you ever talked with a farmer who's got like 10,000 acres of soybeans and have him or her look you in the eye and say, we need this subsidy because... No, I guess not.
It's hard to come up with good go there. No, I mean, I can't say that I have. I mean, we've talked to a lot of, you know, certainly smaller farmers in the course of this campaign, and, you know, a lot of them are very aware of the fact that the playing field is tilted against them, and so they're against these subsidies. You know, even some of the big boys, you know, who do have larger farms, you know, find it a little bit insulting that, you know, they are felt to be in need of handouts, and they can't, you know, run a business, you know, without those taxpayer subsidies. You know, certainly a lot of them can. It's really the very biggest processors and producers who are, you know, the ones who are just seeing this as a way to pad their bottom line. I think most farmers think that it distorts the market, that it really hurts them, and would like to see it ended. It's a hard thing just to defend on its own terms.
Well, you know, the only reasonable explanation I have ever heard in my 747 editions of the Food Chain radio program, was the idea that if you subsidize crops, you even out the highs and lows in the marketplace. But I guess that's the only reasonable explanation I have ever heard. But if you start doing that, if you start trying to even things out, you are also distort every time you subsidize something, you distort the market for that something, right? And I guess that's what we're doing on a major league level here with our $260 billion of taxpayer money. And there it is. So when you looked at this, do you have a background in agriculture?
No, I've worked on healthcare and kind of come to it from that issue area. So certainly been in education of seeing exactly
So what did you think? I mean, when you looked at this, was it a head scratcher for you? When you're working late at night and you're sitting there by yourself and you're looking at these numbers, did you kind of like sit back and scratch your head and say, why are we funding fat?
No, certainly. I mean, I think that, you know, of course, you know, even if you don't delve too deeply into this stuff, a lot of people are generally aware that there are these subsidies. They are going to just these few crops. But, you know, it's very easy to get surprised once you start digging into it exactly how bad the problem is. You know,
we're going to have to take one more quick break. But when we come back, we're going to ask the big question, which is, how do you and I stop the madness and get our money back and our health back? What can we do as people to stop the madness? This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson with Mike Rousseau of Public Interest Research Group and you. Right back. Well, folks, this from Apples to Twinkies. America is facing an obesity epidemic, one that's hitting children especially hard. Childhood obesity rates have tripled over the last three decades. One in five children, now 6 to 11, are now obese. We, you and I, are funding this madness to the tune of $260 billion of our own money taken out of our own pockets over the past 15 years. Most of this money goes to a few farmers, 4%, gets 74%, who grow a few crops that make us very fat. Why are we funding this madness? And why is the government able to take money out of our pockets like that and give it to a few rich people to make us all so ridiculously overweight? That's the question on the table today. I've heard one reasonable explanation. The government says, well, if we subsidize agriculture, we'll take the peaks and valleys out of the market. Okay. If anybody else has heard a reasonable explanation, I'd love to hear it. Mike Rousseau, I bet you would like to hear it as well, right?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, if you're trying to take the uncertainty out of the market, a flat subsidy per acre of corn grown is probably not going to do that. It just moves the whole curve up.
Yeah, so it just distorts the curve anyway. Anytime you subsidize anything, you distort the market for that thing, and then you have to either suffer the withdrawals or keep subsidizing. And so what we've done is we've kept subsidizing. The question is, what can we do as taxpayers, as consumers, as people who are concerned about our health and the health of our children? What can we do to stop the madness, Mike?
Raise us think about it is really what needs to happen. I mean, again, a lot of these subsidies have just, you know, continued on autopilot because the special interests have been able to sustain it and expand them without too much public.
Well, how do we fight against their money? I mean, we give them all this money. They grow crops, they sell the crops, and they take a bunch of the money and go straight to Washington, D.C. and buy themselves some congressmen and some senators and some bureaucrats. And so, I mean, how do you stop that?
I mean, I think a lot of politicians care a lot about money, but they care about it because it helps them get reelected. You know, they care about votes more. And so that's why I think just the voices of ordinary constituents can actually be more powerful. And so, you know, organizing grassroots support in favor of ending these absurd subsidies is really what it's going to take to change this. You know, the Farm Bill is what Congress passed every couple of years, which sets up these subsidies. It's probably going to be up for renewal in the next year or two. And the more that members of Congress are hearing from their districts, from their constituents, from everyday people like you and me, you've got to stop the madness. You know, we can't be subsidizing fat. There's no reason to do this. It's time to bring this to an end. You know, the more they're going to be able to stand up and say, yeah, maybe I don't want this money. Maybe I'd rather be on the good side of my constituents. So, you know,
well,
getting your voice heard.
You know, I think you hit on something there, because I think that because there's been so much consolidation, there's so few farmers. Like only 4% of the farmers are getting all the money. So, and it's all about votes too. So they have the money, but they don't have the votes. We have the votes. Therein lies
exactly
their vulnerability, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, and that's ultimately the kind of power that can push past those moneyed interests and actually get some real change here.
Well, Mike Russo, author of From Apples to Twinkies, thank you very much, and thank you folks for all tuning in. How do we get in touch with USPIRG?
The best way to get involved in our campaign is to go to our website. It's www.uspirg.org. You can read more about the campaign, sign a petition to your member of
Congress.
Thank
you very much, Mike, and thank you all for tuning in. Stay tuned next week for more What's Eating and What Radio on the Food Chain.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.